This is Digital Story Podcast number 805, August 24th, 2021. Today's theme is Three Intriguing Photography Stories. I'm Derek Story. Do you ever go out to eat and instead of committing to an entree, you opt for a few appetizers? Well, today's TDS Photography Podcast is exactly that. A trio of tasty treats that should add up to a satisfying show. So tap your favorite beverage and let's go. All right, so I have three stories for you today. Some bits and bobs, right? Odds and ends. As George Carlin would say, if you have a table full of odds and ends and they all fall off except for one, what do you have left? An odd or an end? I don't know. It's just one of those questions that has no answer. Anyway, so three stories I have for you. And the first one is you can use a 35 millimeter lens on a medium format camera. Now, this just seems like crazy making because 35 millimeter lenses, and I mean for like 35 millimeter cameras or full frame cameras, they project for a certain size sensor that just happens to be smaller than the sensor that are in medium format cameras. And right now I'm talking specifically about the Fujifilm GFX100S. So here's the backstory on this. I have one that I'm testing right now, the GFX100S. I've talked about it, and I have one lens for it, right? I borrowed a lens for a while, another lens. So I had two lenses at one point, but I had to give the other one back. So I have one lens for it right now, which is very nice. It's the Fujifilm 80mm f1.7. It's a great lens, sharp, fast, you name it. But it's also huge, and it's heavy. And 80 millimeters, which translates into what, about 50 millimeters? No, about 64 millimeters for this camera because you multiply the focal length by 0.8, by the way, for the sensor, by 0.8. So it translates to about 64 millimeters, which is nice for some shots, but it's not exactly a walk around focal length, right? 64 millimeters. Ooh, I'm going to go shoot. Well, I'm not sure what I'm going to shoot at 64 millimeters. But when you're in the studio or when you're doing some product shots and stuff, it's fantastic. So I needed something else. Here's the problem. Those lenses run about $2,000 each. They only have Fujifilm branded, only has one lens for $1,000, and then everything else is like $2,000 or more. And the $1,000 lens, the 999 lens, the 50mm f3.5 is the one I borrowed and I liked it, but then they wanted it back. People are funny that way. So I'm going, okay, I need a different lens for this camera. So I'm thinking, I have all these cool Nikon lenses. I have 28mm, I have a 35mm f2.5 that I just love, love, love. Have 50mm, have 105mm. So I got these great lenses. Is there any way that I could make these wonderful lenses work on this medium format camera? Well, of course, the answer is no, right? Because no, they're the wrong size. They project, you know, the wrong size light thing on there. You know, it won't work. You'll get vignetting, heavy vignetting on all the corners, and they're older lenses, so they weren't designed for these modern sensors. So they'll, you know, the images will look like doo-doo, you know, all these things, right? So I go, I know, but I need a lens. I need a lens other than that 80 millimeter. I need something else. So I started doing some investigation. And here's what I came up with. First of all, they do make adapters. Photodiox makes an adapter for Nikon, you know, all the way up to G-mount lenses that go on the GFX. And I'm going, wow, that's cool. They have an adapter. And it's a really nice adapter. It was $99. And it even has aperture control on it. So what you do is you put the lens on. If it's a Nikon G, you know, it doesn't have an aperture ring, so it's automatically stopped down. But you put it on there, and when you put it on the adapter opens it up to maximum aperture. And then you can use the aperture ring on the adapter to adjust the aperture, the f-stop. And I go, wow, that's kind of neat. but also my Nikon Series E 35mm f2.5 worked on there. Actually, every lens I put on there worked on there. So I'm going, okay, I'm going to do some testing because, you know, the match has been made here. So let's learn a little bit more. Let's see what's going to happen. Well, as it turns out, Fujifilm sort of anticipated this kind of thinking, and they have a 35mm mode on the camera. Yeah, it's in the menu system, 35mm mode. And I go, that looks intriguing. Okay, let's take a look at that. Well, that is made specifically for using an adapter and 35mm lenses on the camera. Now, it changes the camera from a 100-megapixel camera all the way down to 64 megapixels. So you only get 64 megapixels with it, but it is cropped to what 35mm lens project on the sensor. And I'm going, this is really neat. So I tried it. And lo and behold, it worked great. And oh, woe is me, I'm only getting 64 megapixel shots on the camera. So I've using these cool lenses that I have on a very nice camera with all the modern features, electronic viewfinder, all the Fujifilm simulations, all sorts of, you know, fun little things like skin softening built in, all that. And I'm going, you know, I'm having a blast with this thing. But the real proof will be when I put those images on the laptop and look at them. So I shot RAW and JPEG, and my first serious test was out at Fort Ross. I've been playing around the studio with it and stuff like that, and it was promising, but my first real test was a shoot at Fort Ross, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit. And I used the 35mm f2.5 on there. I set everything up, and then I loaded the RAW files into Capture One Pro 21. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do some lens correction and all that because Capture One Pro is so good at that. And it can do, you know, pre-RAW processing. So I'm going, oh, all right. So I said, all right, I'm going to pick the lens profile, the 35mm f1.8 Nikon, which is, you know, should be close. So I picked that lens profile. And then I moved the slider for light fall off, and whatever little shading was in the corners went away. And then I moved the other slider for sharpness. This is all, you know, pre-processing stuff. This is just working on the RAW file. This is in, you know, optical correction zone. And I added a little sharpening right at the beginning there. Not creative sharpening, but, you know, RAW processing sharpening. And I'm looking at this image on my screen, and I'm going, wow, that's pretty nice. And I enabled the Acros Plus Red film simulation. And I'm going, that's looking extremely nice. So then I do a little contrast adjustment, highlight shadows. I do a little clarity. And then some, you know, sharpening, some creative sharpening, the regular sharpening. And I'm looking at this file and I'm going, this is beautiful. This is really cool. The corners were exactly as I wanted them because I had that light fall off slider. So you just move the slider to the corners, look the way they're supposed to. The sharpness and detail was good. Even for a lens that was designed for film photography, the sharpness was very good. And, you know, I'm looking at this thing at 100% on the screen, and the detail not only in the center was good, but even over toward the edges was good. So I'm going, wow, why aren't more people talking about this? This is really fun. And I spent $75 for that Nikon Series E lens. I spent $99 for the adapter, which looks really cool. It even has a red band on it, the whole deal. It's a very hot looking adapter. And so I'm in for, you know, I spent the $75 forever ago. So I'm really in for $99 on this. So I start putting other lenses on there. Put on the Voigtlander 40mm f2. Beautiful. The Nikon G 50mm, beautiful. And suddenly I have all these lenses for the Fujifilm GFX 100S. Now I have to manually focus them. Okay, I don't have any AF. They're not as sharp as the, you know, the Fujifilm lenses designed for the camera, but with that many megapixels, it doesn't make that much difference, right? They sharpened up beautifully in post. The metadata isn't as much. I don't get as much lens metadata, but Fujifilm does also allow you to set up lens profiles for, guess what, lenses that you use an adapter with. So I have a lens profile for all the lenses I use with this. So I still get which lens it is, and I get the maximum aperture. And I like the pictures. Bottom line on this, if you're thinking about medium format and you're sort of turned off by the price of the lenses, but you think you can swing the camera and you have some high quality optics, you know, full frame optics around already, there is a path forward. And I have to tell you, it's a very fun path. And these lenses are small and light, and suddenly the camera is easy to carry around. I'm having fun with it. And I never would have guessed that I could have done this. Story number two. What I did while recharging my car in the middle of nowhere. So I told you last week I was going to do this road trip to field test the VW, the electric vehicle, on a camping expedition to see, well, you know, is this a workable situation or not? And I was testing all sorts of things, not just charging it, but like, how was it sleeping in the cabin with the panoramic, you know, roof and all that kind of stuff? So I published an article on Digital Story. If you want to read about the entire trip, it's all there. And there's lots of pictures and the whole deal. And bottom line is, everything worked great. I have a couple little tweaks I want to do, and I will test those on the next trip, but I am really happy with how everything went. So the part I want to tell you, though, is that I had read via PlugShare, which is an app that I use for, you know, finding chargers, that Fort Ross, one of my favorite places, one of my favorite California state parks, had a charger there. And it was part of an initiative. And I go, wow, that is in like a really nice spot. It's on the way to my final destination. So I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to time it so I get there around lunchtime, and I'm going to test out their charger, see how it works. And it's a level two charger, which means, you know, it's not nearly as fast as the chargers that we have in urban settings, you know, all the high-speed chargers. But level two is not terrible if you're just topping off. I wouldn't want to do it from ground zero charge, but for topping off, not bad. And I go, that way it can be topped off. That way, if I have something unexpected happen on the trip, I've got plenty of juice. I go to Fort Ross. I pay my $8 to get in and pick a state park. And I go over and I hook up the charger and everything's working. I'm going, okay, off to a good start. So what did I do during this time that I was topping off? Because that's what people ask me all the time. What do you do when you're charging? I mean, it's not like a gas station. You go in and you're out in 5 minutes or whatever. And I go, you know what I do? I do one of two things. I either take a nap, which I'm somewhat ashamed to say, or I say I'm checking email, but I'm really taking a nap. Or I go take pictures if I'm in a great spot. This time I planned on taking pictures. So first I wanted to have a little bit of lunch. So I have a picnic bench there with a nice view of the car and a nice view of the terrain, beautiful spot. And I'm having a sandwich that I made. I made an egg salad sandwich from scratch that morning. Oh, it was so good. Tastes so good. So I enjoyed that. And the car's, you know, charging. And then I went and took pictures. And guess what pictures I took? I did this whole test with the Fujifilm GFX 100S with the 35 millimeter lens. I did an entire shoot. Was out there for 45 minutes hiking and shooting and just having a blast. When I finished shooting, I hiked back to the car. The car's all topped off and ready to go. Put the charger away, get in the car, and I head off to my next destination. The nice thing is that even though I had to pay to get in the state park, which you always do, which was worth it for the shoot and the lunch and all that, the charging didn't cost me anything. That was all kind of part of the package. So I had a great time, a great shoot, a great lunch, and topped off the car. And that's the way that I'm going to try to plan, you know, my charging en route when I'm on these longer trips. I want to do something with that time. I want to use that time to make me slow down a bit and do more photography or meditate or, of course, nap, all that kind of stuff. So that's what I did on my very first charging in the middle of nowhere, and I came away with some wonderful shots. Win, win, win. All right, here we go. Story number three, getting a grip on the Nikon ZFC. So to refresh your memory, the Nikon ZFC is their retro-styled DX mirrorless camera. And it's a beautiful little thing. I mean, if you like the traditional Nikon SLRs, it's a beautiful camera. It really is. So you may recall that I talked about this camera a bit when it was first announced based on the specifications that I read. And I was disappointed with some of the specifications. I was disappointed that it didn't have image-based stabilization, that it opted for, you know, their vibration reduction that happens at the lens, optical stabilization. So I was a little disappointed about that. And there are a couple other features that I wasn't thrilled about, but it's so cute. It really is. It's really a pretty camera. So I said, you know what? I don't like judging things without actually trying them. I don't want to be one of those guys that, you know, just reads the specs or reads someone's article and then forms a judgment and, you know, never really tries the item. I mean, I was a little bit wrong about that Peak bag that I talked about. When I first saw that bag, I thought it was too small for anything. Got my hands on it, and the X100V fits in there perfectly. My iPad mini fits in there perfectly, all that. And suddenly I'm using the bag all the time. And so even though I thought it was too small when I read the specs, I get my hands on it, and suddenly I'm liking it and using it. So I said, I need to try out this camera. If I'm going to say disparaging things about it, you know, before I have my hands on it, I need to get my hands on it to either confirm what I thought on paper or to change my mind. So I got my hands on it and I brought it on this trip. I'm softening my stance. I am. Here's the thing about the camera. It takes really good pictures. That lens impressed me. It honestly did. That little zoom lens that, you know, kit zoom lenses, they get such a bad rap. And this one's a 16 to 50, but it's on a DX. So it's like a, 24 to 75 lens. But it was sharp and the colors were good on it. And it has a nice close focusing ability. And it's optically stabilized. So even though it's not the fastest lens in the world, it has built-in optical stabilization. And then it collapses, you know, the way it's one of those collapsing pancake zooms, so that when you collapse it, it doesn't take up much room. And I'm going, this is a nice little lens, not so much for indoor existing light work, but for outdoors, you know, when you're doing what I was doing, which I spent a whole day with, where I used nothing but that camera and then my iPhone 12 Pro Max for the ultra wide lens, using it all day. I really started to appreciate what Nikon had done with it. It was enjoyable to use. Looking at the images through the electronic viewfinder was gorgeous, really pretty. It takes great shots, on and on and on. And so I'm liking the camera, except for one thing. And there's no grips on this thing. I mean, they really got crazy about going retro because, as you know, many of the early SLRs did not have, you know, a front grip or a back thumb grip. You know, they just had the camera. And for some reason, Nikon really dug its heels in on this design and said, we're really going to stick with the retro look, including no grip. Well, the thing about it is that it was actually hard for me to hold over the course of a day because I had nothing really to hang on to. And what I like to do, especially with the smaller mirrorless cameras, which, you know, I think this qualifies for, I like to put a wrist strap on it, have it around my wrist, have the camera on, and then carry it while I'm hiking. Just have it in my hand. That way, if something happens, I'm ready to shoot. Boom. And when you have a little lens on there, like that 16 to 50, that's a very doable situation. So I'm carrying it around, and I keep trying to figure out how I'm going to carry it because it doesn't have any grip. So I ended up carrying it in my hand with my fingers, my thumb and my forefingers wrapped around the 16 to 50 millimeter zoom lens. And that's the way I carried it. But that's not ideal. I'd rather carry it by a grip. So I get home and I go, you know what? I want to say good things about this camera. I want to recommend this camera because it's a very, very good camera. But the whole grip thing was driving me nuts. So I go, someone out there must also have this observation that I've had about the camera and the grip. So I start searching, and guess what? Nikon had this observation about it. I think it may have been a ploy to get more money out of us. However, Nikon has actually designed the accessory GR1 extension grip for the camera. And I saw a picture of it, and it does exactly what I want. It has a nice little grip that comes around the front, but it's not too big. It has a plate on the bottom with an opening so it doesn't obscure the camera and the memory card compartment. So you can leave the grip on and get to the battery, get to the memory card. And it just suddenly makes this camera easy to carry. They use the same texture on the grip that's on the camera, so it's a perfect match. It's a nice style. And I go, all right, where can you get one? Well, right now, you can't get one anywhere. They have catalog entries for it in Britain. So there, and I have a link to it in the show notes. You know, when I talk about this stuff, I have links to everything in the show notes. So I have a link to it in the show notes. So you can click on the link and look at it. But they'll let you know when it's in stock. No one in the U.S., none of the U.S. distributors have it yet. So it's not available here. And also, I should say that it's going to be probably about $120 in the U.S., maybe a bit more, based on, what I saw when I was shopping around. So they're going to get you for at least $100, probably, closer to $120, $130, $140 for this thing. However, you put that grip that I saw on this camera, and then with everything else that it does, it was nice. It's a good camera, and I'm actually changing my tune on it with the grip. So, with the 16 to 50 millimeter lens, I believe it's $1,099. So let's say $1,100, and then you add the grip, so now suddenly you're at $1,200, let's say $1,250 for a workable kit, but it's a nice camera. So if you're interested in this camera and you hold it and you're kind of bummed like I am that it's not the most comfortable thing in the world to hold as is, just know that the GR1 extension grip has been designed. They are making it, and it will get to your home turf maybe a little bit after the camera is available, maybe the same time. We'll see how that works out. But I'm really happy. Well, I'm of two minds, actually. I'm really happy that it exists because suddenly it makes this camera workable. I'm bummed it costs an extra $120 or $30 or so to get it. But hey, welcome to photography, right? All right, so those are my three intriguing stories, three appetizers that hopefully add up to a satisfying meal. I hope you enjoyed them, but guess what? We still have more show. Our first writing workshop. When I announced the workshops, coming up through the first part of next year, the end of this year and first part of next year, there was infrared and a Capture One Pro and another black and white. By the way, the infrared photography workshop that starts in September has sold out. It's full, but there's going to be another infrared early next year. So if you missed out on the infrared workshop that's coming up, the next one, know that we still have another one you can sign up for early next year. But one thing I haven't talked about yet that I am so excited about, I really am excited about this, we're going to do our first writing workshop. And I was thinking about this when I was brainstorming on the workshops. I go, yes, I'm a photographer, but I'm really a photography writer. I have written a number of books published by publishers. I am a top writer in photography on medium.com, and I have a few other credentials as well. I was going, why don't I talk about writing? Because I love writing and I love talking about writing with other writers. So I say, I'm going to do a writing workshop. So we have one scheduled for December, and it's called Writing for Artists Who Want to Publish And then I put in parentheses, or just get better, right? I'm going to read you some of my own copy here. This online workshop is designed to help photographers and all types of creatives improve their writing skills for online sites, including publications such as Medium.com. Useful for the business environment as well, because improved clarity in writing often translates into successful business interactions. Over the course of 4 sessions, you'll learn how to translate your thoughts into effective articles and posts that will engage readers. We will cover online style, article construction, self-editing tips, and promotion. You will also have access to our online workshop community, Derek Story Online, where you can ask questions, share techniques, and show off your work. Your membership to our online community extends past the workshop itself, so you can continue to share notes with those who share your particular interests. And then we're going to have weekly meetings for this workshop, and they'll be via Zoom. And I just thought December is such a great time to do this kind of workshop. We already have it half filled, and I know a couple people that have signed up already, and I can tell you right now, this is going to be fun. So if you want to be a better writer, and this is nonfiction writing that we're going to be doing here, if you want to become a better writer, this is a way to help you move along that path. I have a lot of tips. I've been writing professionally for a long time. I like writing. I'm continually learning new things about surviving as a writer. And I will share all those things. I will share everything that I know with you in this workshop. And I think it's truly going to be fun. So if you want to sign up, you can click on the link that's in the show notes and reserve your spot. Or you can just go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops, and you'll see it there as well. Writing for Artists Who Want to Publish, our first online workshop, is going to be in December of this year, and I can't wait for it to start. All right, I have a little virtual camera club news. Let's start out with our Inner Circle members. These are some of my favorite people on the planet, I will tell you that right now. They are the folks that support this community and this podcast month in and month out. And they also share their ideas, offer suggestions, and give me feedback. They are invaluable to the success of what we're doing, and I so appreciate them. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look at our site. If you like what you see, join us. Join us. Become part of this community. I think you will get a lot out of it beyond the discounts for workshops, which you get, beyond the other goodies, beyond the inside information. I think you'll just like hanging out with these other folks. And for our existing Inner Circle members, thank you so much. I appreciate your support. Earlier, I mentioned Medium.com, and I continue to publish on there. And in fact, I have an article going up. It'll be Tuesday afternoon. So if you're listening to this after Tuesday afternoon, on using 35mm lenses with the GFX 100S. If you like that kind of stuff, or if you're curious, I have screenshots on how I, work the files in Capture One Pro. I have a picture of the adapter that I use and the lens that's on there. And I have all the information, all nice and tidy in one article. That's the kind of stuff I publish on Medium.com. If you're interested at all, go over there and take a look. I have a link in the show notes, or you can just go to Medium.com, search on my name, and you'll get my author's profile that has all the articles there. And if you enjoy what you read, follow me, because Medium likes it when I have followers. They think then that I know what I'm doing, and they continue to shine a light on my work. All right. And finally, I want to mention our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that live, breathe, and eat inkjet paper. Well, I don't know if they eat inkjet paper, because that would be very difficult to chew. But if anyone did eat inkjet paper, it would be Red River Paper, because these guys have both feet immersed in the world of inkjet printing. They are my go-to source. And when I get requests for prints, which I have some right now, You know, right away, I go to the Red River Paper site. You just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. It takes you over to our landing page. I nose around. I find exactly the right paper stock for the project, you know, based on what the person is requesting. They send it to me, and they send it to me post-haste, which I appreciate. And then I make those prints, and suddenly the world is a prettier place. And that would happen with your work as well. They also have a fantastic Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Get your inkjet printing on. Start printing some stuff now for the holidays so that you have some gifts, aces in the hole, ready to go. Do some fine art greeting cards. Get your work out there other than just showing people stuff on your iPhone. Red River Paper can help you do it, and they can help you do it now by clicking on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Come back next week for more interesting stories. I'll be here. Until then, be safe, stay creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.